Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, November 29th, 2019. Welcome back to the CBS Sports I Own College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and though we normally record Friday's podcast on Friday morning, we decided to wait until deeper into the day on this Black Friday because there was just too much good stuff happening early in the day, specifically at the Battle for Atlantis. So we waited, and boy, am I glad we waited, because the Battle for Atlantis hosted what is now, I think, the greatest story in the sport. It was an 8-team event that featured four schools ranked in the top 13 of the current AP poll, specifically number 6 North Carolina, number 8 Gonzaga, number 11 Oregon, and number 13 Seton Hall, and yet a currently unranked team held the trophy at the end. Hail to the victors valiant, hail to the conquering heroes. The Michigan Wolverines are the champions of the 2019 Battle for Atlantis. They beat Iowa State 83-76 on Wednesday, beat North Carolina 73-64 on Thursday, and earlier today they beat Gonzaga 82-64. You know, only one AP voter had Michigan on a top 25 ballot in the preseason. It was Marcus Fuller from the St. Paul Pioneer Press. That's a reverse poll attacks, if you will, and yet Michigan is now 7-0 with convincing wins over number 6 UNC. The top 25 and one. They'll obviously move up again Saturday morning. So shouts to the Fab Five. Shouts to Cassie Russell. Shouts to Glenn Rice. Shouts to the little homie Trey Burke. Matt Norlander, please praise Juwan Howard and his undefeated Wolverines.
I thought we were going to start the podcast by talking about the Ole Miss player that fake pissed on the field. But you want to go with Michigan? We can definitely do that. I'm ready to go into Michigan, but I honestly thought that you might want to just divert just real quick, because I know that I think that actually more than any college basketball result we have this weekend, I feel like, and I don't even know the dude's name, but I feel like that actually was really, really the sporting event and the sporting moment that made your weekend, Parrish.
So it was Thanksgiving, right? And I grew up in Mississippi. I still live in Mississippi. My wife is an Ole Miss grad. Her brother, my brother-in-law, is a Mississippi State grad. We've got friends who went to both schools. So that game is a big game, even when Ole Miss sucks like this year and Mississippi State sucks like this year. And so Thanksgiving, at some point, you know, the kids get tired. And it's like, all right, it's time to go home. And we get home, and the kids get to sleep, and then I'm just like, I'm watching basketball, but I also got Ole Miss Mississippi State on. And for people who didn't see it, Ole Miss is down a touchdown, score in the final 10 seconds, and then the guy who scores the touchdown, he gets hit, falls in the end zone, crawls, maybe four or five little crawls, and then hikes his leg up as if he's pissing on the field in Starkville. That's an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. They move the PAT back, and at that point I was like, there is 100% chance this guy misses this kick. There's no way he's making this kick. And of course, wide right, Mississippi State wins at 21-20. Ole Miss cost itself the opportunity to win in overtime because one of its players pretended to be a dog taking a piss. You don't get better than that. I mean, I tweeted last night, imagine someday having to tell your grandchildren that you cost your team a possibility of a win against an in-state rival because you pretended to be a dog taking a piss. And then as I started thinking about it, I was like, you know what? That's a great story, actually. Like, it's if my grandfather told me that story, I would think it's the funniest story in the world. So what a deal that was. And what I don't think people paid enough attention to, you go back and watch the, because everybody's seen the picture. I don't know how many people actually have seen the video. He hikes it up, like, really good. It's, like, quick, and it was like he practiced that before. Like, that, I don't feel like that's the first time he ever pretended to be a dog taking a piss.
Strong pantomiming skills there, and not unprecedented, by the way. Odell Beckham Jr. was the first one to do it, and then apparently former Ole Miss wide receiver DK Metcalf also might have done it. So we don't have to make this into a college football podcast, but that was, I don't care what happens Saturday, what happens Sunday, that's a moment that won't be topped, and the urine-related puns to have come out of that thing have brought me just exceedingly so much joy and laughter.
Well, it's so easy. It's old piss, hottie potty.
The piss that led to the miss, all that good stuff. Yes. All right. So on a completely different note, Michigan and Juwan Howard now 7-0. A lot of people didn't see this coming with Michigan, but obviously I did. No, I didn't. Only Marcus Fuller was the one who maybe even remotely saw this coming. It's a great story. Michigan's legitimately really good right now, Parrish. Saw their game on Thanksgiving, saw their game here on Friday. I thought this team would get into the tournament but be like kind of flirting with, you know, Dayton first four. I was wrong, man. Xavier Simpson continues to be a fantastic point guard. John Teske, I think he had the best game of his career on Friday against Gonzaga and against a legitimate Gonzaga front line. Michigan also it had no issues with North Carolina. I was with my family, with my brothers, able to watch that game. And I was in the moment, I was surprised that Michigan was playing as well as it did against Carolina. Even, you know, a little more of an up-tempo game than I thought they were going to give them. But credit to them, man. Gonzaga, Carolina, Iowa State, all in Bahamas. They have a win against Creighton as well. That equates to four top 70 wins at KenPom's, the second-best offense in the country right now. And Isaiah Livers, I mean, to me the story is how good the defense has been, and then they're obscene from three-point range right now. You've got Isaiah Livers has made 21 of his 41 attempts. Eli Brooks has made 50%, 16 of 32. Xavier Simpson doesn't shoot a ton, but he's still at 44.4%. John Teske, the big man, he's even 5 for 16. And then David DeJulius, a newcomer, relatively speaking, a sophomore, he's made 11 of 23. Michigan's been on fire from deep, and obviously, early returns are as good as they possibly could be. Juwan Howard, good karma for him. He had a video go viral. I don't know if it deserved to go viral, but then again, it had been a long time, if ever, if I'd seen a coach like go out of his way to be the one to wipe up the sweat off the floor. I don't know if you saw that or not, Parrish. But
it has been presented as, look at Juwan Howard, this generous multimillionaire, former NBA star, Fab Five, who's now like still not too good to get on his knees and wipe up the floor. It might have been that. Was it that, or was it, if nobody else can do this right, I'll just get down here and do it myself? It felt like maybe, and maybe I'm just reading it different way, but it felt like maybe he was just out of frustration, like, Jesus Christ, people keep slipping right here. I'll go handle this myself if nobody else can do it.
Yeah, which might be it. But nonetheless, good karma on his side, and now Michigan is going to go from unranked and into the polls here. So just a couple quick facts, and then GP, offer up whatever you want in terms of Michigan, where you think it should be ranked, what you saw, what you liked, and all that good stuff here. Unranked, and now top 10 seems a virtual guarantee. Top 5 is possible. I wonder if the collective AP voting body will go that strong with the Wolverines on Monday afternoon. A couple of instances where this has happened. You had in November 2010, UConn was not ranked. That was the year with Kemba Walker where they did not lose a game in bracket play the entire season. They won in Maui, then they won the Big East tournament, and then they won the national championship overall. UConn was not ranked, and then it bumped all the way up to number 9 when it beat Wichita State, which was unranked, Michigan State, which was the number 2 team in the country, and then Kentucky, which was the number 9 team in the country at the Maui Invitational. The biggest jump, or one of the biggest jumps ever, was 89, so 30 years ago. Kansas was unranked to begin the year. It won a road game against LSU. It beat number 25 St. John's, and then it beat the top-ranked UNLV Running Rebels in the preseason NIT. That got them up to number 4 in what would have been the second week's poll of that season. And then I saw Sean Farnham tweet out one more graphic as well. The most that we've ever seen in the history of the AP Top 25. So Kansas got to 4. Ohio State in 62-63. I don't know who the Buckeyes beat to do this, but they were unranked to start the season, or unranked at some point, and then they jumped. They entered in at number 3. My guess, I'll throw a blind guess out here. I'm going to say Michigan jumps up and they are number 8. I've got a little bit of cynicism over whether the collective voting body is going to be willing to say this team was not ranked, and now I'm going to write them as the second team, fourth team, sixth team in the poll. I think that's pretty aggressive, but there's no doubt about it. They're operating like a top 5 team in college basketball, and yeah, they are now pretty much, you know, outside of maybe Stephen F. Austin, as good as any story going in the sport right now, and shame on us for not potentially giving this team more credit in the preseason, because it looks like it's got the goods and looks like it's as good as any team in its conference, and yeah, maybe even the sport in this very moment.
I will say, if they don't get higher than 8, then people just aren't paying attention. At some point, you've got to forget what you thought you knew and just respect the results. They have skyrocketed at KenPom in all the way up to number 12 right now, and that's still taking into account some last season stuff. So that suggests that if you only focused on this season stuff, it would be even better than that. I'll have them. I've got them 7 on Friday morning. I'll have them somewhere between 2. I'll either have them as high as 2 and no lower than 5. And I think you could make an argument that they could be number 1. It's not just that they are good. I hope this makes sense. Sometimes teams, you like look at their body of work and you go, hey, you know, the body of work is they got 2 top 10 wins. You know, you don't really see it, but you know, it's like it's there. I'll say the same thing I said about Dayton, about Michigan. If you watched them, they looked great. It's not like they just won some games. They looked great while winning games. And they won both games by comfortable margins. Here's some more details. They were up 24 points at one point on North Carolina. They were up 21 points at one point on Gonzaga. And it's not like we don't know if Gonzaga or North Carolina are legit. Sometimes you might beat somebody early, and it's a surprise, and you go, man, that's a top 10 team. But then when you find out is that they're not really a top 10 team. But North Carolina bounced back and beat Oregon, and Gonzaga's already got big wins over Oregon. And you can say, well, maybe that just says Oregon's not good. Except Oregon's got a win over the Memphis team that just beat NC State down 2 starters. Like, Oregon's good. And Michigan handled Gonzaga and North Carolina, 2 teams that handled Oregon, in pretty convincing form. You mentioned earlier about how well they're shooting the ball. Right now, 2-point range, they're shooting 60%. That's 5th in the country. 3-point range, shooting 42.4%. That's 11th in the country. Effective field goal percentage, 61.4%. That ranks 2nd in the country. So not only do they have a nice body of work, they look the part. They look great, and Juwan looks comfortable. And I had a couple people point this out on Twitter, and I don't think it's worth I do believe it's worth pointing out. You know, everybody focus, no previous head coaching experience. Now, we've seen in other areas where that didn't really matter. Steve Kerr in the NBA, Fred Hoiberg at Iowa State, Penny Hardaway at Memphis, now Juwan Howard at Michigan. He hired Phil Martelli. Now, I don't even know what the relationship was between – I can't imagine there was this, like where would the relationship come from between Phil Martelli and Juwan Howard? I think that he just looked for and maybe I'm wrong about this. If so, somebody can correct me. But I think he just looked for, hey, I need somebody who's done this for a long time to just sit beside me. And Phil was available, and that's looking like a smart hire. I think it's reasonable to assume Phil has had an impact on what's happening at Michigan right now. But either way, what a tremendous story. When John Beilein left at a weird part in the calendar, there weren't great candidates available. But when Juwan Howard emerged, I believe we talked about it on the podcast, and I said, given the other options, I would just hire Juwan Howard. And I don't say that to say, and look, because who knows? But it made sense to me at the time, and now it looks like the most sensible thing in the world because he's recruiting. Got a 5-star commitment in the class of 2020, and now the on-the-court stuff is great as well.
And plenty of listeners I know did watch the game on Friday between Michigan and Gonzaga, but if you did not see the game and kind of just checked your phone or, heck, you're learning about it via this podcast here, It was dominant. I mean, Xavier Simpson was using the pick and roll at his leisure. It was unbelievable to see how good he was, how frequently good he was overall. And Teske was just a beast to the level where I think I actually had my opinion changed on Michigan's ceiling. If you tell me Livers is going to be that, first of all, Isaiah Livers, if he's going to be that, he's getting drafted. Defensively, he is already certainly adequate enough. And now if his offensive game has expanded to that point, then forget about it. He has been awesome, and he's got great length, and he's made a real jump so far. It's been pretty terrific. Gonzaga came in without a loss. It looked like it just had not played anyone of that caliber and wasn't quite ready. Now, this is also 3 games in 3 days, and I get all that, but Michigan had to do the same. Michigan had the toughest road, having to face Iowa State, then UNC, and then Gonzaga. I mean, the only other team that had a tougher three-game and three-day stretch, I think, of any team in America was Oregon, and that got Seton Hall, Gonzaga, Carolina, and Oregon, as a result, went 1-2, and even the Gonzaga loss was only by 1 point in overtime, and that was on Thanksgiving night. Couple other quick notes here on Michigan. It's 7-0, and we're going to be talking about the Wolverines plenty here in the near future on the podcast, because next game is against Louisville, at Louisville on Tuesday. Could be number one Louisville against number four Michigan, number eight Michigan, number 11 Michigan. We'll see where that is when we get to Monday. And obviously we will preview that game on the Sunday evening podcast, because there's going to be plenty to get to with that. But then even after that, I mean, Parrish, then you got this, because of the Big Ten schedule with 20 games, you got these December games in league play. You get Iowa at home, you're at Illinois, and then, yeah, you get Oregon, does Michigan, on Saturday, December 14th. So in the next 15 days, they have four relevant, interesting games. And the Iowa game, that's an Iowa team that is 5-1, that got the, like, kind of under the radar, what the hell happened, 72-61 win over Texas Tech out in Vegas on Thanksgiving night. Hawkeyes look good. Their only loss is to DePaul. Hello, DePaul is 8-0 after winning at Minnesota on Friday, and now DePaul will play Texas Tech on Wednesday. We'll get to that on the podcast next week. Don't worry, we're going to mix in some Blue Demons talk when it comes time, but my point is Michigan is going to take, I would think, at least one loss, and if it took two, that would totally be reasonable, because I got two road games, two home games, and the home games against Iowa and Oregon. That's like solid teams. Like, all those teams could be in the mix for the NCAA tournament. So if we come to see that Michigan takes a bad L here, it doesn't mean everyone overreacted if they wind up being like the eighth team, the sixth team in the AP poll or anything like that. It's just going to be tough to pull off. And in the broad scope, let's say they go 2-2. So they'll be 9-2 through 11 games. Are you kidding me? If you told any Michigan fan in October, we're going to give you 9-2, or you're going to guarantee it, or you just chance it and see what kind of record you get, they would take the 9-2. Every single freaking Michigan fan would have taken that, because no one knew how good they'd be, how Juwan would be. Fantastic start for him. He's the coach of the year for November in college basketball.
Not only if you're a Michigan fan in the preseason, if I gave you 9-2 in the first 11, would you take it? You'd be thrilled with it, because you could have went 0-3 in the Battle for Atlantis, at least in theory, right? There was no, it was, when you're in an event, you're unranked and in an event with four top 15 teams, like that the expectations aren't wonderful. And so now you're 7-0, and whatever happens from here happens from here. You know, depending on what the AP voters do with Michigan this week, we could have a top five matchup of teams on Tuesday inside the Yum Center, because Louisville is going to probably be number one, no worse than number two. And then, again, wherever Michigan goes, that's where Michigan goes. But if you're wondering real quick why Michigan wasn't ranked in the preseason, I did not rank them. No AP voter did, except for Marcus Fuller. It's because of what they lost, both on the bench and on the court. You know, there was a time, like probably early March, where I started, you know, just, hey, I've got an extra 20 minutes. I'm going to do some prep work on the next season, top 25-1. You know, Michigan, I guess Michigan fans probably just knew this off the top of their head. I realized it, you know, studying the roster. I was like, everybody can come back. It's a 30-win team. Everybody could theoretically come back if they wanted to. And given that they didn't have any guaranteed lottery picks, or even likely lottery picks, you know, there was a scenario where it wasn't unreasonable to imagine that. And I thought, if everybody comes back, they'll be preseason number one. It won't be Michigan State. It'll be Michigan. And then, of course, they lose their top three scorers, and then they lose a Hall of Fame caliber coach in John Beilein. And they replace him with, all due respect to Juwan Howard, just somebody who's never done it. And so you could still rank them if you wanted to, but it was very reasonable not to. But come this Monday, it's no longer reasonable to not rank them. And you said you would guess 8.
Yeah.
That's fine. I will not spend a Politex column on somebody who ranks Michigan 8, but I'll have them in the top 5. And I think you could reasonably have them. If you just wanted to go nothing but I'm going to put the team with the best resume number 1, you could have them number 1. I think anywhere 1-5 is completely reasonable. I'll definitely have him in the top 5.
All right, I got something I want to ask Parrish on that exact note in regard to your rankings. We're going to get to that, but first, check this out.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Okay, Parrish. So as we record this on Friday, what I'm about to say out loud is the ranking you had coming into Friday, and I understand that there's going to be a few things adjusted, but when I was looking at your top 25 and one, I kind of took a step back and I thought, I wonder if the general college basketball following public is really in tune with what's happening here in the sport and how weird this top 10 looks compared to what we thought heading into the season. It's not just the number one ranked team falling. I went into the history of that and how we've been through a November like we haven't ever had before. So I want to get to a few things. One, which team you think deserves to be number one, and if that's the same thing as the team you think is playing the best in college basketball. But right now, heading into Friday, here's what you had. You had Louisville, number one. You had Kansas, which was able to win in Maui, beat Dayton in a great game on Thanksgiving Eve. Obi Toppin was a baller and had maybe the best highlight of the season outside of Stephen F. Austin winning at the buzzer when he took a three, turned around halfway through, and stared down Kansas's bench and made it. It was incredible. Kansas is two. You got Maryland third, and Maryland was able to defeat Harvard on Friday in the semis of the Orlando tournament. It will play for the title there. Has yet to lose a game. Virginia's four. You got Gonzaga 5, Ohio State 6, and this is what caught my eye because heading in, you had Michigan all the way up at 7, a fast high riser. Oregon 8, Dayton 9, and then Kentucky 10, and then just so people are aware, like, where the big boys that I think might need to be there. Duke is 11, Michigan State 12, and then Carolina is 13. Carolina, just so everyone knows, was able to defeat Oregon on Friday. So who's to say where they will wind up? But Dayton at 9, interesting. I think I agree with it as of a top 10 team. But if you want, just, you know, we got teams relevant to recent results since we last podcasted. Why Louisville over Kansas? Is it purely a function of they were ahead? Do you think Louisville is playing like a better team than Kansas? And then if you want to just touch on, you know, the Dayton stuff and like Michigan, where you think they're going to bump up now? I mean, Gonzaga with the loss makes sense. But I think it's a rather eclectic top 10. And obviously it's a top 10 that I don't think a lot of people would have foreseen even as recently as 10 days ago.
Okay, my personal view would be at this point, any undefeated team that also has strong computer numbers can reasonably be ranked number one. And so that would be Louisville, Virginia, Ohio State, Michigan, even Auburn's in the top 15. I think any of those teams I just named could reasonably be ranked number one. Like if I saw it on a ballot, I wouldn't go, well, that's Monday's Politex column. All of it's fine. I believe it will be Louisville, number one on Monday. We're recording this on Friday evening. They're up 20 on Western Kentucky right now with less than 4 minutes to play. So they're going to win that game probably by double digits, at which point they will be 7-0 with 6 double-digit wins. They're number two at KenPom right now, which means they are the highest-rated undefeated team at KenPom because Michigan State is still number one at KenPom. They're the only preseason top five team in the AP poll that remains undefeated. The other four have all taken a loss. And like I said, they're number two in the AP poll right now. Usually number two moves to number one. And so I believe it'll be Louisville, and I will have Louisville number one in the top 25 and one. I could make the argument for Michigan just based on resume, but I try not to. I'm not saying I've never done it. I think I did it last year when Duke was so overwhelming in the opening game of the season. I moved Duke to number one the following morning, even though the number one team did not lose. I think number one might have been Kansas, and I just dropped them because it was because like Duke looked like the way it looked. But I try not to rank. I try not to drop number one teams unless they lose. So I will have it Louisville one, and I think I'll keep Kansas two. But I could make the argument to move Michigan all the way up to two. But I at this point, Louisville or Michigan would be my number one team. I don't think I would strongly consider anybody else.
Before the game between Michigan and Gonzaga was played on Friday, if we had podcasted this morning, I would have said Kansas would be my number one team because I think it's playing like the best team in America. It's got I really do think I'd have Michigan number one because the resume's incredible. It's the best resume in America right now. I think inarguably the best resume in America. Now, I know we're only seven games in, eight games in, depending on the team you root for, maybe even six games. But I don't even know how many teams are close. Had Kansas been undefeated, it would have a real viable point there. But it's not undefeated. It lost to start the season when it opened in the Champions Classic. So I would go Michigan 1. I would go Louisville 2, Kansas 3. The Maryland stuff is interesting because it's just it's maintained, and Anthony Cowan's played really well in the past couple of days. And then Virginia's just its defense is insane, and it's going to maintain a good ranking so long as teams can't crack 50 points on them, and almost everyone has failed to do that. You had Gonzaga 5. It didn't look good. We'll be interested to see how far you want to drop the Zags. You had Oregon 8. Oregon dropped 2 or 3. But again, it actually had the toughest road of anyone, Michigan included, who played in battle for Atlanta. So it's like, what do you do with Oregon? Like, it's not a top 10 team right now based on results. And because of that, are you going to wind up scooting up Dayton, which has looked like a top 10 team? And it's not just Obi Toppin. They've been so well-rounded overall. I will be intrigued by that. And we're just going to get movement in general as we go forward. Like, just as a random heads up, like, Seton Hall is going to play Iowa State two out of its next three games. Just because of the way the bracket schedule works and what they have in the regular season, Seton Hall, GP's got them at 14. They're going to be shifting, and we got plenty of stuff to still sort out the rest of the weekend. But, yeah, this is a it's a noisy week for the better of college basketball, GP. Just a lot of stuff. Even, like, we're not going to talk about or predict this game, but, like, even tonight we got Utah State St. Mary's, like, the last awesome game of Friday night. That, like, that kind of stuff will have an impact on the rankings as well. This really has turned into, I tweeted this earlier Friday, I can't remember, usually the day after Thanksgiving, GP, like, you get the college football and you might get a couple of good, decent, like, games in there. This is as stacked of a slate as I can actually possibly ever remember for the day after. And because of that, you are going to get in both Parrish's daily top 25 and one, and when the polls refresh on Monday, like, this will be a lot of changeover with teams dropping out, jumping up, and et cetera.
Some specifics on Oregon. They finished fourth in the battle for Atlantis, but nobody had a tougher three-game stretch. They had to play Seton Hall, Gonzaga, and North Carolina on consecutive days. Three games in 3 days against top 13 AP teams. Like, that's rougher than anything you get in the NCAA tournament. They beat Seton Hall. They lose an OT by 1 point to Gonzaga, lost by 4 points to North Carolina. So, like,
2.3 points. Yeah, their average game was decided by 2.3 points. So they're just a fascinating case pair. 6-2, yeah. But the two losses are totally reasonable.
Yeah. I'm not down on Oregon at all. Obviously, if you're Dana Altman, you'd rather win than lose. But I thought Oregon showed itself well. And, you know, keep in mind, they've also got, you know, they got three top 40 KenPom wins already. They got a Memphis win, a Houston win, and a Seton Hall win. Like, it's a two-loss team. Like, some people would – the people who just focus on records will go, how do you have a two-loss team in the top – wherever I have them. I've got them in the top 10 right now.
You got them 8 right now. But yeah, before, like, you update for tomorrow, which they might drop down just to, as a function
of the much, day. Not much. I mean, I don't punish teams – I try not to punish teams for losing, you know, games that they were supposed to lose, for losing competitive games to also awesome teams. And so – yeah, Oregon's got two losses, but they're 6-2 with two losses to top 10 KenPom teams that were close. They've got three top 40 wins, and their five-star freshman in Vali Dante hasn't even played yet. He will be joining that team very, very soon. I feel fine about Oregon. I know you mentioned that maybe you'd have Kansas number one. I think you came back and said you'd probably go Michigan, but the case against Kansas – if you want to say Kansas is playing better than anybody else, I can't really argue with that.
Except for Michigan. Like, yeah, exactly.
I mean, I can't argue with something subjective like who's playing better than anybody else in the country. I will say, and this might just be a philosophical difference between you and I try to and it's still very early, but I try not to just ignore losses. Like if something happened, it happened.
Yeah.
And you know, Kansas is 6-1. They have a loss. And the loss came to a team that subsequently lost at home to Stephen F. Austin. Like I can't get around that. It doesn't mean that if you asked me to pick a Final Four tonight, right now, I wouldn't have Kansas in it. But I don't think when you've got Louisville, preseason top five team, undefeated, 7-0, six double-digit wins, when you've got Michigan 7-0 with those wins, even Virginia, I don't think you can rank number one a team, regardless of how good you think they are, a team that's got a loss on a neutral court to a team that subsequently lost to Stephen F. Austin.
You're right. And then when Louisville's number one on Monday, that's going to be the fourth different number one in 5 weeks. Yeah, that's kind of fun. And if Michigan pulls off the win, if it's able to, you'll have a fifth number one in 6 weeks, because then Michigan, I would have to believe. I mean, if it was able to do that, like it's going to be the next number one so long as it doesn't take a loss after that.
Well, let me go ahead and tell you this. Okay, I'm not sure where I will have Michigan in Saturday morning's top 25 and one, but it will be no lower than five. No lower than five. I promise you this.
Yeah.
If they then go and win at the Yum Center, they should be the and then don't take a loss before the next Monday.
Yeah.
They should be the unanimous number one team in the country. It's like if you, they, then you will get the Politex column pointed right at your throat if you don't have Michigan ranked number one after that. If Michigan wins at the Yum Center on Tuesday night, Michigan will be number one in the top 25 on Wednesday morning. And if they are undefeated through the following Sunday, they should be number one on every top 25 ballot.
All right, let's pick some games, buddy.
You ready for the Final Four and one?
I am very much ready. And I, by the way, given the hour we were recording this, I am hoping that you only have Saturday and Sunday games, because there's basically no point in picking any Friday games, which is ironic because it's an awesome Friday slate. But because it is awesome, we started late, and now it's we're getting too deep into the hours here.
This might be a little too inside baseball, but very difficult Final Four and one this week. And the reason is because most of the Good Friday games are gone. So we couldn't deal with that. And then most of the good Sunday games, or at least some of the good Sunday games, are going to be created with Friday results. And we don't have all that done yet. So it's slim pickings out there. But I got my four, and then you will have your one. And I will tell you, I do have one Friday game. And the only reason I included it is because, A, slim pickings, and, B, it doesn't tip till 11:30 Eastern, for crying out loud.
Let's do it then.
We're going to start Friday night, 11:30 Eastern, number 15 Utah State at St. Mary's. St. Mary's is a 3-point favorite. Norlander, you pick it.
I'm surprised they're a 3-point favorite. Give me Utah State on the money line. A reminder, heading into this week, Parrish 5-9-1. I am 8-6-1. I will take Utah. I think Utah State's the better team, and I think that they will win outright.
I have made this point before. I always root for the top 25-1. It's easier for the top 25-1 if Utah State wins this game. So I will take Utah State plus the 3 points. Saturday.
Okay.
And sometimes I will pick games because it'll give us an opportunity to touch on some things that maybe we ought to touch on. And that's very much what this one is.
Okay.
Saturday, 5 p.m. Eastern. It's Stephen F. Austin at Arkansas State.
Love it.
Arkansas State is a 2-point favorite, which, by the way, most disrespectful thing I've ever seen in my life. These dudes they just went to Cameron Indoor. They just went to Cameron Indoor and won, and you're going to make them a 2-point underdog in Jonesboro? It's disrespectful.
It is, but there's reason for it. So,
no reason for that. If you can win at Cameron Indoor, you can win in Jonesboro. We'll get the picks in a second. I want to tee you up on this.
Okay.
You did some follow-up work on Stephen F. Austin, wrote a nice column. People can find it at cbssports.com. The most interesting thing you found out the day after Stephen F. Austin upset the Duke Blue Devils and included in the column was what?
I assumed that Nate Bain, who got the game-winning layup, I learned a ton of interesting stuff. If you have not read it, please bring it up on your phone on the CBS Sports app. Go to cbssports.com. I spent literally my entire Thanksgiving Eve like making calls and texts and reporting on this piece, and plenty hit the cutting room floor there. But the story of him and the GoFundMe, I think the general public is aware that it was like at $2,000, and now it's like at $140,000 or higher. So it keeps going. It's an incredible story, and that became a story unto itself. The guy, Bain, went on CNN to talk about it. Just awesome. Like, that is the best story in college basketball so far this season.
CBS News sent a team to Nacogdoches.
Amazing.
CBS News.
For a college basketball outcome in November. How awesome is that? That's national news. It's terrific. But when I talked to Nate, he said, you know, the GoFundMe page says it's for my family, but, you know, we live in Hurricane Alley. His father is a coach on the Bahamian national team for basketball. He was the former principal at the church and the school. They're one building in the same, 750 kids. So basically what he was saying was, we had insurance on our house, and, like, we've been able to kind of, like, you know, I think for where they live and who they are, like, the, you know, they're a family of not necessarily, like, you know, they're not affluent, but they're not of total modest means. So he's like, we took care of ourselves. Everything that is going to be raised by the GoFundMe is going to go to rebuilding the church and the school and the infrastructure there, and to families who actually, like, desperately need it. That, to me, was the most overwhelming thing that I learned from Nate. But just real quick on him, like, overall, another part of this was that they were debating. They weren't even debating. They were going to shut down the GoFundMe page. And it was basically because they, like, there's been, like, changeover in the Stephen F. Austin Athletic Department, and they were just slow to do it, and they were going to shut it down, but you got to get the routing number to the family because you can't get the money until the GoFundMe page is officially closed. So because they dragged their ass on this, that's why this story is happening, because the intention to close it down had basically been decided 2 or 3 weeks ago when he'd only raised $2,008, and he was, you know, frustrated, annoyed by that. You know, this huge, devastating Hurricane Dorian hits in the summer, and you want to do what you can to help your countrymen and help the people that you know, grew up with. He had a classmate who died as a result of the hurricane, and it just never took off. You know, I wasn't aware of it, and I actually had some, like, retrospective reporter's guilt about that, and it just never garnered momentum. And then just talk about your all-time karma. I mean, swinging back in the best, most amazing possible way. That was the number one thing. But if you haven't read it, just sit down, read. There's honestly, there are, like, 9 different angles to the story behind the story. And one thing that didn't make it that I thought was kind of cool, because I asked Kyle Keller, listen, I'm sure you've got 500 unread text messages, the coach at SFA, but off the top of your head, like, is there one particularly from maybe a friend, not even in basketball, but if it is, like, a coach or someone that texted you that stood out? He's like, you know what? You know who it was? He said, I haven't read them all. I've only read 100 of about 800 that I have. But the one that really hit me hard was Justice Winslow, because when Keller coached at Texas A&M, they heavily recruited Justice before he went to Duke. And then Justice, of course, goes to Duke. And it's Justice Winslow who sends, like, this long, heartfelt text message to Kyle Keller that night about, listen, I know it's been a tough couple months for you, because Stephen F. Austin has an assistant who's battling cancer. And Kyle Keller's mother, who was, like, a real big presence around the program, she, you know, had just health issues, and she rapidly deteriorated and died to the point where Kyle Keller took 4 weeks away from the program. That doesn't happen at the Division I level unless it's doctor's orders, essentially. You can't really run a Division I program if you have an entire month where you weren't working. So anyway, he said Justice Winslow reached out. He still maintains a good relationship with him. And I thought that was really, really, really cool. So I could literally talk about this for 20 minutes. It's an incredible story. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to bring it up, because the conversations with Kyle Keller didn't sleep. And he did, like, 12 interviews, because you know what? When you're Stephen F. Austin and you pull off that win, like, you do it to promote your team and to promote your school, and it's you want documentation of this 15 years from now, so you can go back and relive it through all this stuff. And for him to do it, Nate Bain to take time to talk to me, other coaches, you know, behind the scenes to kind of give me information, just a real, real awesome story. With all that said, I'm taking Arkansas State -2. Evansville has not won against a Division I team since it beat Kentucky. Got to go against the Wolves. GP, do you remember the last time we talked about Arkansas State on this podcast?
The last time we talked about Arkansas State on this podcast.
Well, first of all, I incorrectly called them the Wolves again. This was the team No, it's not. Never mind. No, wait. Yeah, wait. Was it Central Arkansas that opened up the season against Baylor? Remember we talked about Baylor being the first team?
Yes, I remember. That's Central Arkansas. This is Arkansas State. This is the Red Wolves. This is the Red Wolves.
They are the Red Wolves. Okay, so yeah, I'm good there. So anyway, I'm taking them. I'm taking them minus two, because I would love if Stephen F. Austin continued to win. This was the 266th team at KenPom before it was able to pull off the win against Duke, which has rightfully affected its standing overall. Arkansas State chilling at 249 with a 5-1 record. It did get blown out by Ole Miss, but otherwise, you know, just won at Colorado State by two. Give me Mike Balado's Red Wolves to cover the two. I think we're in disagreement here, though.
I can't go against Stephen F. Austin. Now, I can't watch a team win inside Cameron Indoor and then say, but they're going to lose at Jonesboro. I mean, I'm not ruling it out. Of course it could happen. Hell, it probably will. What's my record again on these things?
You're currently 5-9-1.
There you go. So congratulations to Arkansas State on their victory. That'll happen Saturday night over Stephen F. Austin. But for the purposes of this, I will take SFA plus two. Saturday, 5 p.m. Eastern. Northern Kentucky at Arkansas. Two games inside this is probably the last time we will ever in the Final Four and One have two games originating from the state of Arkansas. But I bring this up because Arkansas off to a 6-0 start. They're up to number 23 at KenPom. So Muss is doing it on the court. No big wins yet. I mean, they beat Georgia Tech at buzzer in overtime, but like nothing like Michigan, but still 6-0, up to number 23 at KenPom. That's real stuff. And then on off the court, number 5 recruiting class in the country right now, class of 2020, 4 top 100 prospects committed, all of whom are from Arkansas. K.K. Robinson's the most recent to commit. He's a point guard from Bryant, Arkansas. So I've got like close friends who are Arkansas graduates, and they're fired up right now. Like, they're getting to watch quality basketball. You know, they've got a KenPom subscription. They're like, GP, we're number 23 at KenPom. When can we get into the top 25-1? 6-0, undefeated. And, like, I don't know. But they're on my radar. Like, Arkansas is legit on my radar. And then number 5 recruiting class in the country, 3 of the top 5 recruiting classes in class of 2020 right now, by the way, SEC classes, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Arkansas. So it's good stuff happening in Fayetteville, Norlander.
Yeah, 50 points per game on the money allowed by Arkansas. That's third best in the country. What's our line here? What's the number?
Arkansas minus 15.
Okay. I think if you said that, I was looking for the points per game stat because I know they were high up there. I'm going to take Arkansas. I mean, Northern Kentucky, it's, you know, new coach Darren Horn and all that stuff. Arkansas has been better than I expected it to be. I've been wrong on a couple. I've been wrong on Michigan. I have been devastatingly wrong on Providence, which just lost another game on Friday. This is one of my all-time whiffs. And then I didn't think Arkansas would be anywhere near contention for an NCAA tournament bid. Maybe it ultimately isn't, but so far it's looking just great. Elite defense. Arkansas to cover the 15. Give it to me.
Yeah, I'll go Arkansas too. These are two of my. I like both these coaches, Eric Musselman and Darren Horn, but I'm going to take Arkansas minus 15 because Arkansas, as somebody who grew up in the Nolan Richardson era, when they were consistently one of the top 5 to 10 teams in the country, watching that program be down for as long as it's been down, or at least not be what it should be for as long as it hasn't been, that's not fun. Watching Arkansas be relevant is fun. Told you I got friends who are Arkansas grads. Watching them be happy is fun. I don't want that to be ruined. So Hawks move to 7-0, cover the 15. Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern. It was just set since we started recording this podcast. Number 5 Maryland against Marquette. It's going to be the title game of the Orlando Invitational. Did you see what Marcus Howard finished with?
I didn't, but he was just on fire again when we started going. What did it wind up being?
51 points against USC.
51?
He got 51.
He just had 40.
Yeah, well, he got 11 more since last time you checked.
No, I mean, he had 40 in the game before.
He had 40 in this game at 1.2, I'm certain.
Marcus Howard this season, points, 38, 18, 18, 11. Shouts to Andy Toole and Robert Morris because they only lost by 4 points and Marcus Howard only had 11 points. Davidson, he had 40, and then he had 51 here. I would think that might get Marcus Howard by the end of the night to the nation's lead for scoring average. What's the line?
I had to invent it.
What do you mean you had to invent it? You don't get to invent the line. What are you talking about?
I had to invent the line. Well, because it's not, obviously the line's not set for a Sunday game yet, and KenPom hasn't updated yet to give us a... Oh, no, it has. It has just updated.
Okay.
The line will be... Are you ready?
Hold on. What line did you invent? Be honest. What was the line?
I invented Maryland minus three.
Okay. First of all, this will get real fun in a hurry if in the future you just want to invent betting lines.
I invented Maryland minus three.
Okay.
KenPom has it Maryland minus one.
All right. Oh, man. Maryland minus one. Terps have not lost yet. 7-0. I watched a lot of their game against Harvard, which is like finally like looking to be something close to what we expected Harvard might be. It's had injury issues. This is a great Sunday game, by the way. I feel like no matter who I pick here, I'm going to be wrong. Marquette fans have reminded me that I've been quite wrong on their team as well. So I will go with...
Marquette fans like to remind people of stuff.
They do. They do. That's your favorite fan base, if memory serves. I will go with... I'm going to just ride Marcus Howard in Orlando. 51 is just absurd. Yeah, give me Marquette to win outright. In doing so, that would mean they cover.
I root for the top 25 and one. Maryland's in it. Marquette is not. So, I'll just take Maryland minus the one. But Maryland is the undefeated, preseason top 10 team, undefeated. Hadn't really looked like it. I mean, they struggled with Harvard. We're behind in the second half. So I won't be surprised at all if Marcus Howard goes out and gets 40 and Maryland loses. But for the purposes of the top 25 and one, I'll pick Maryland. So those are my four games. As previously stated, The rules of the final four and one is that you get to pick the fifth game every week. Pick it, Norlander.
Okay. I figured that you might not pick this one. So this is I didn't have to go to my contingent games. I'm picking the one that I am scheduled to attend in person. Weather pending. Apparently, we might have like 6 to 8 inches coming for Connecticut in Sunday into Monday. So hopefully this doesn't affect my travel schedule because I only live about 25, 28 minutes from Lee Amphitheater in New Haven, Connecticut. It'll be the Vermont Catamounts against the Yale Bulldogs. Vermont is 6-2, has lost two of its past three against Division I competition, had the close game at Virginia, lost by six. That's when Anthony Lamb played tremendously, and then had a weird loss against Ryder on Sunday that was in at Mohegan Sun. I had left by that point. I did not stick around to catch that game, but that's something of a mystifying loss. Yale is 5-3, coming off wins against Western Michigan in Bucknell. Yale is 99th in KenPom. Vermont is 80th. The line right now, according to Mr. Pomeroy, heading into this, is Yale by two. It's 2 points. So Yale minus two in Lee Amphitheater, which I don't think you've been in that one, GP.
I have not.
I will be going again. Who are you going to take?
Well, listen.
I love this segment.
Vermont is, like, that's the one team that's played Virginia.
Yes.
It's the one team that scored on Virginia.
Yes.
So, like, my heart, my brain, tells me to take Vermont as an underdog, right? I mean, if you can play at Virginia within six, you should be able to play at Yale within, what did we say the number is again?
Two.
Two?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that math probably works. Okay? But my heart says Yale because I do TV work with James Jones. Seems like every postseason.
Is that really a reason?
I think it's as good as any other reason I've ever had for picking a game. James Jones, nobody else has ever noticed this. But, when you sit at a desk, people sit different ways, right? Some people sit straight up. Other people, put an elbow on the desk. Some people, maybe lean to the left or lean to the right.
Mostly people sit the same way, but yeah, okay, go ahead.
James Jones, if you can ever find a video of it wherever, he puts both arms on the table, on the desk, sort of leans in. He just looks super cool. He looks so cool. Like, if I look like that, I'd look like I'm slouching. I'd look like I'm about to go to sleep. I like the way James Jones sits at a desk. I like the way he leans on a desk. I'm taking Yale. I'm laying the points. Yale minus two.
You've got your reasons for sure. Okay, I'm going to take Vermont plus two, which means if you've been following this, we only have unity on two games. We both think Utah State is going to cover the three against St. Mary's on Friday night, and we both think Arkansas will be 15 points or better at home on Saturday. You've got Stephen F. Austin. I've got Arkansas State. You've got Maryland. I've got Marquette, and you have Yale. I have Vermont. That's fun. That means you can catch up to me, or I can extend my lead. But that is the final four and one for this weekend.
He's great at just sort of leaning and looking cool on the desk. It's an underrated skill. I mean, it's probably a useless skill for most people, but if you're on TV, it's very valuable.
I'd love to see you try and lean right now, because I think you still are dealing with severe tennis elbow, despite the fact that you don't play tennis. So I don't think that you can even do what – I don't even think you could mimic trying to do that right now.
Spoken like a man who's never had tennis elbow, Norlander, tennis elbow will not prevent you from leaning onto a desk. It'll prevent you from picking up a gallon of milk, though. That hurts like hell. But it's laying on the desk, no problem whatsoever. I will say, if you want a tennis elbow update, have we talked about tennis elbow on this podcast?
Not on the podcast, but when I saw you at Champions Classic, you said it was as bad as ever, and I thought that can't be possible, but apparently it is.
Okay, I got double tennis elbow. Should I tell people how I got double tennis elbow?
Well, I think at least 75% of the listeners are going to know, because you talked about it 2 months ago. But we do have new listeners, so if you want to give a very abridged version, by all means, let's do this before I have to put my children to bed.
Okay, the quick version is this. When my wife and I didn't plan our children very well at all. We had one when we were too young. We had two when we were too old. So now we've got a 16-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And when the 16-year-old was young, we got him like one of those wooden play sets. You know, it's got a slide and a little clubhouse and some swings and whatever. And now, you know, and then, of course, he hasn't touched it in, you know, 12 years. It's just been sitting in our backyard. And but then we got little ones, and they like to play on it, but it's so old now, it's like rockety and riggedy, and we're like, listen, we got to tear that one down and then buy them a brand new one. And so I went out there to look at how do you tear something down, and it was like, you know, you need to get a drill and undo some screws. I don't know how to do any of that, but I noticed the wood was so fragile that this just popped into my head, because I'm a great thinker. I said, you know what, I could probably get a sledgehammer and just beat the wood to death, and then, like, we'll just carry the wood out to the street, and that'll be it. And so I did it. I ordered a 35-pound sledgehammer on Amazon.com. It came in. I unwrapped that thing. I went out to my backyard, and I just beat a swing set to death. And I will tell you, it worked exactly as I anticipated. The wood crumbled into piles, and then me and my oldest son, we walked it out to the street, and it was gone. It's been gone. I woke up the next day, and my arms were hurting. And I thought it was just sore, because I'm not used to swinging a sledgehammer, but then they just never stopped hurting. And then they just never stopped hurting, and I was diagnosed with tennis elbow in both elbows. And what that is enlarged, inflamed tendons, and it makes everything painful. Not where it's completely unbearable, but just your day-to-day life is not comfortable anymore. And the only quick fix is surgery, and even that's not a quick fix. But ultimately, most people, you heal yourself, you ice, and you take aspirin, and you do exercise, and then you just wake up one day, and it's gone. And I will tell you, update, my left elbow is fine. I no longer tennis elbow on my left elbow. It's great. My right elbow is worse than it was originally. It hurts every day. And obviously, I can't have surgery right now because I have to type. I mean, who else is going to rank basketball teams every morning?
With one hand.
Imagine me trying to rank Michigan with one hand. It's impossible. So the plan right now is to hope that it gets better before the end of the basketball season. But in the likely case that it doesn't at this point, I'll be going under the knife, Norlander. I have off-season surgery on my elbow.
Oh, gosh. That's just unbelievable, man. That's no good. No good.
You know how dumb you have to be my age, out there swinging a sledgehammer so hard and consistently that you damage both of your arms? Like, I make my living with my hands. It's what I – my mouth.
And your mouth.
Too, but my hands. Like, the only thing dumber than, like, me – messing up my arms would be like me cutting out my tongue. Like, I would have no way to create income after that. So anyway, hopefully I'll get better. I just want to be better. I just want to be pain free like I used to be. I don't want to hurt anymore.
You're great with your hands and your mouth, and they need to be better. That's for sure.
That's what she said.
All right.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Jester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. Antigo. He's a legend. Shouts to Larnell. Please go subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcast. Rate it favorably. 5 stars, nice comments. I'm going to pick out, I think Norlander promised, two new comments left at Apple Podcast for Sunday's podcast. And so I'll share them toward the end of that one. That means we will talk to you again on Sunday. Till then, take care.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.